14th, 1948, is probably and perhaps the most visible move of God since probably the summer of 70 AD when the Romans laid siege to and ultimately destroyed Jerusalem. Whenever you're feeling a little down and you have that tendency to take your eyes off of Him and the wind and the waves are capturing your attention and you feel in your very human heart, Lord, is it true? Is it real? Call up a world map and call up the Mediterranean Sea and scan to the right just a bit and there it is on the beautiful eastern slope of the coastline, Israel! Bum, bum, bum. Ezekiel 36, verse 24. If you have a highlighter, oh, it's good to highlight this one. For I, the Lord, will take you, Israel, from among the nations, plural. Gather you out from how many countries? All countries, and bring you into your own land. Thus saith the Lord. And right in your margin there, May 14th, 1948. Now, if you would skip a few pages to the right, chapter 38 and 39, I believe, will be the next most visible move of God. Verse 1. Now the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, set your face against Gog. People speculate on this, but you don't need to. Write Amos chapter 7, verse 1, and Revelation 9, verse 11. His other name is Apollyon. He is a demon king, likely a reference to Lucifer himself. This is a demon king that is calling the shots in this land. Set your face against Gog, the demon king, the demon quarterback, of the land of Magog, the prince or the leader or having authority over Rush, Meshech, and Tubal. This is Russia. Who is Magog? It doesn't take a whole lot of scholarship. The Greeks called these people the Scythians. The Syrian histories, some dating back to 700 BC, they refer to the Great Wall of China that was there at the time, or a portion of it. They called it the Ramparts of Magog. And why did those people build that big, huge wall? To keep a group of marauding steppe land horse people out of their land. The Scythians. And who occupies that realm today? That's Russia. The chief prince of Rosh, Meshech, and Tubal, and prophesy against them. Meshech and Tubal, go ahead and go to our next slide if you would. Here are their modern day designations. I remember a friend of mine years ago telling me about this wonderful church that they had found. You know, you should go check this out. Give this one a listen, Mr. Political Science Man. And it was Pastor Burt breaking down the origins and the histories of these names. I don't know who Foot or Put or Persia or Tagarma. I didn't know what those people were. But then there was Burt Smith back in 1980 using their modern day designations. Russia, that's in the Bible, is going to be cozy with Persia. Iran. And some of you remember in 77 and 78, the Shah was the West's best friend there in Iran. The Ayatollah Khomeini runs in, and the whole place is turned upside down and is now a Shiite regime in the area. And that person that lent me the tape said, I don't know exactly how it'll look, but it won't be long until Iran and Russia are buddies and cozy. Russia and Iran, are they cozy? The Bible said this was going to happen. Verse 3, and say to this Gog, this demon quarterback, and here's what I want you to say to him. Thus says the Lord God, behold, I am against you, O Gog. You are the prince of Rosh, Meshech, and Tubal. Verse 4, I will turn you around and put hooks in your jaws and lead you out with all of your army horses and horsemen, all splendidly clothed in a great company with bucklers and shields, all handling swords. And here they come. Persia. Who's Persia? That is modern day Iran. Ethiopia. There's a small little group left and a bit of a nation called Ethiopia today. But after the writing here of Ezekiel, Ethiopia would grow quite huge, quite large. And in fact, before Ezekiel's time, the queen of Sheba is rumored to be from this location. A huge and greatly advanced civilization and an important military force. Today, who is Ethiopia? Ethiopia, or Cush, if you have a King James Bible, that is today the Sudan, Ethiopia, and Somalia. Now, what is the major and typical religion of this area off the top of your head? Largely Muslim, in the 90-plus percentile. Libya, that's easy. You know what Libya is? That's Libya. But it's a little bit more. It's the Muslim North Africa, which would include Tunisia, Algeria, and Morocco. And again, what is the major religion of those areas? Muslim. All of them with shield and helmet. Gomer. Please don't snicker because I love that show as well. Golly. I had a 70s TV moment right there. Is everybody okay? Who is Gomer? This is what we would call the Balkan Peninsula. And maybe a bit further east, perhaps even to the stands of southwest what used to be Russia, Turkmenistan, and all the other stands that live there. But that's Croatia and Kosovo. Kosovo, by the way, 95% Muslim. That realm was probably, to a large degree, as far east as Western civilization, and specifically Roman Catholicism or Orthodox Christianity migrated. After 600 AD and following, the Muslims, ultimately the Ottoman Turks, ruled this whole area. So if you travel in the Balkan Peninsula these days, you will see strong Western architecture and you will see a strong representation of Persia, or what we would determine as Muslim. Bosnia-Herzegovina, 51% Muslim. How many of you remember 92 to 1995, Sarajevo and the Bosnian War, way in our rearview mirror for many, but President Clinton, it was a real head-scratcher for him. And they called it a conflict between the Serbs and the Croatians. But if you do your history, this is the age-old struggle between Christians and Muslims. That's what was going on there. Let's keep rolling. Gomer and all of its troops, and the house of Tagarma. This is Turkey. See the Anatolian Peninsula there, where Turkey is. The Anatolian Peninsula there, that's where all of the seven cities, where the seven churches were, that are in the book of Revelation. And the Assyrian Empire had its capital in that region as well. And this fellow Antiochus IV, who about 167 BC rolls southward through Israel into Egypt, because the last portion of the Greek Empire, led by the Ptolemies, was ruling there, and he wanted to whip up on those guys. By the way, Cleopatra, or Elizabeth Taylor, she was not Egyptian. She was Greek. And Antiochus IV rolls down. He is repulsed by the Ptolemy army, and a young upstart nation, seafaring peoples, known as the Romans, were getting started. Thoroughly defeated, he turns tail and runs back up north, stops there in Jerusalem. And there were some Greek sympathizers who were Jews who lived in the area. And so Antiochus IV was so upset that he gathered to himself the Hellenists, or the Greek Jews, And he pit them against fellow Jews who were God and Jehovah God only. And he killed hundreds and thousands of Jews and slaughtered priests. He put a sacrifice of a pig on the brazen altar of the Jewish temple. And then he goes into the Jewish temple. He erects there a statue of his Greek God in the holy place where the Ark of the Covenant at one time had been. Was that a bad day? When he set up this idol inside the Holy of Holies, where the Shekinah glory of God used to shine. And the Jews hearken and remember back on that awful day as the abomination of desolation. Did you know that Antiochus IV is a model of the Antichrist? Who will do the same thing? Only when the Antichrist does it, halfway into the Great Tribulation, he breaks his covenant and says, I don't care what the Jews want to worship. Everybody's going to worship me now. And he puts, instead of a statue of Zeus, he puts a statue of himself. And Jesus refers to that as the abomination of desolation. Do you understand that God never does anything surprise? He always gives us lots and lots of models. Well, where was Antiochus from? He was from the Anatolian Peninsula. There's something spiritually very, very dark. There is a wall, a spiritual wall, a spiritual iron curtain, as some theologians have said, that the enemy has laid across the Anatolian Peninsula. And if you know the history of Turkey, after World War I, the Ottoman Turks, who were very Muslim, they owned this whole region. That goes all the way back to the Crusades, when the church was sending these holy warriors back to the Promised Land, one terrible fiasco after another. But the Ottoman Turks, or the Muslims, have held that area for a very long time. In World War I, the Ottomans jump in with the wrong crowd. They jump in with the Axis nations. World War I is settled. The Allies win that war, and the Ottoman Turks are dispersed. There's a fella by the name of Gamal Ataturk who comes to the fore of Turkey, and he says, we are going to completely move away from our Muslim underpinnings. He removes all of the caliphs, all of the colleges. He outlaws the burqa, or the headscarf. And he makes everybody wear a fez. And then he moves away from Islam as a religious sort of underpinning for the nation. And he installs a democracy that is very pro-West. Since the 1920s up until World War II, the Turks were very much and firmly in the fold of NATO and also of the West. Now, after World War II, you would think that Turkey would get a lot more respect. They have a hard time completely fitting in with NATO. When the European Union is getting rolling, Turkey applies and she is summarily, what would be the term? No thank you. No thank you, no thank you, no thank you. And how many of you have heard since really the year 2000 that Turkey is moving away from her Western understanding? And she is moving now more and more toward her hundreds-year-old tradition of what religion? Muslim. And Erdogan, and now the president, and now practically the entire parliament of Turkey is now Islamic. And the last vestige of sort of, we're not going to have a religiously run country, is the army. Is that changing? And when it does, the last piece of the Ezekiel 38 and 39 scenario will be in place. Verse 7, prepare yourself and be ready. You and all your companies that are gathered about you, be a guard, or be the quarterback, Gog, or Russia, be the guard for them all. After many days you will be visited. In the latter years you will come into the land of those brought back from the sword, gathered from many people on the mountains. Who is this referring to? Israel after 1948. The mountains of Israel, which had long been desolate. Yeah, right, 19 centuries. They were brought out of the nations, and now all of them dwell safely. Circle that. We'll come back to that. But is Israel dwelling in the land safely today? Not really. The Hebrew word there is bitach, bitach, and it means it's a false confidence. They have a real confidence in something, but we don't know what it is. Verse 9. You will ascend, coming like a storm, Magog, etc., and et al., covering the land like a cloud, you and all of your troops and many peoples with you. And thus says the Lord God, on that day when you swoop in, it shall come to pass that thoughts will arise in your mind, and you will make an evil plan. You will say, you know what? We're going to go up against the land of unwalled villages. I will go into a peaceful people who are dwelling safely. There's your word again. All of them dwelling without walls, second mention, and having neither bars nor gates. Is there walls in Israel today? The 400 plus mile safety fence in the urban areas, it's a 30-foot concrete wall separating the Palestinians from the Jewish population. Why did they do that? Because Ariel Sharon was basically saying, no more can a Palestinian terrorist sidle up to a bus stop and blow up his vest of explosives. That's why they put the security wall and security fence. Are these two ideas, dwelling safely and without walls, is it true of Israel currently? Not yet. So I think there's some things that need to take place. But let's keep reading. Verse 12. What is the motivation? To take plunder and to take booty or spoil. To stretch out your hand against the waste places that are again inhabited and against the people gathered from the nations who have acquired livestock and goods and who dwell in the midst of the land. So Israel is doing very, very well in this scenario. And as we saw last week, here's a couple of nations on the side who are powerless to intervene, but they basically are going tisk tisk. Sheba and Dedan, Saudi Arabia. The merchants of Tarshish. We developed that last week. That's probably Great Britain. The merchants of Tarshish are mentioned in a number of locations in the Old Testament. And one of their big exports, says Ezekiel, is they export silver and tin. Tin was important because you melted that as best you could with copper, and then you had bronze. Since the last 3,000 years, that's where the world gets most of its tin. And Britannia means land of tin. And their young lions, this may be a mention of America in the Bible. Don't know for sure. But where did America come from? From Great Britain. Here's what you're going to say. Have you come to take plunder? Have you gathered your army to take booty or spoil, to carry away silver and gold and take away livestock and good and to take great plunder? Hey, what are you doing? Verse 14. Now watch this. Therefore, son of man, prophesy and say to Gog, thus says the Lord God, on that day when my people Israel, circle that, that's important. My people Israel dwell safely. You will not know it. Then you will come from your place out of the far north. What is the biggest nation directly north of Israel today? Russia. And you and many peoples with you, all of them riding on horses, a great company and a mighty army. You will come up against my people. Circle that. There it is again. Like a cloud to cover the land, and it will be in the latter days. You and I, loved one, are living in this reference right here. This is you, and this is me. And this, I believe, is that generation that Jesus referred to, that saw Israel become a nation again. That I will bring you against my land, so that the nations may know me, when I am hallowed in you, O Gog, before their eyes. Why is God doing this? There are people that say the battle here of Ezekiel 38 and 39, that's just the Armageddon campaign. No, it's really not. It's not the Armageddon campaign in the book of Revelation, because in the Armageddon campaign, number one, who's involved? The whole earth is. Do they come into Israel? But they're led by the Antichrist. They come from the whole earth. In this campaign, notice, they're coming mostly from the north and some from the south, but there's a kind of a close-knit sort of circle around Israel specifically. Number two, the king of the north in Daniel 11 involved in the Battle of Armageddon, the Antichrist. He is forced into the battle. It's not his first choice. Here, this king of the north, he starts the conflict. So, different understanding. Number three, in the Armageddon battle, the Antichrist is prominent. Here, in this one, there is no mention of the Antichrist. Some would want to call Gog that Antichrist, but I don't think so, for some reasons. Number four, all the nations are involved in the Armageddon campaign. And in Ezekiel, you'll notice that Egypt specifically is not mentioned. Egypt is mentioned prominently in the end of Daniel chapter 11 as being very involved. Number five, what is the point of the Armageddon campaign? What is the Antichrist trying to do? He's trying to destroy Israel from off the planet. What is this guy doing? What is his major reason? For spoil. And then six, Israel has to have an immediate flight to Petra. Matthew chapter 24, Jesus tells that. Halfway into the Great Tribulation, the Antichrist makes himself known. The seven-year tribulation of the book Revelation begins when the Jews embrace this political, military, economic leader as their Messiah. He's the one who is able to broker the final Middle East Arab-Israeli conflict. Many people have tried. The Antichrist will be successful. So enamored are the Jews with this man of political ability, economic strength, and military power, that he's the one who enforces a seven-year treaty, the 70th week of Daniel. That's in Daniel 9. The Jews are so impressed, they hail this guy, this political leader, as their Messiah. Also prophesied in the book of Isaiah that the Jews will make a deal with hell itself. Halfway in, something happens. The Antichrist throws off his ruse, throws off any pretension, and says now, instead of the Jews worshiping in the temple that he helped build, 3.5 years in, he breaks the 7-year contract, and he says, everybody's going to worship me.